This is a reading of The Michael Mystery by Rudolf Steiner. This is letter number 6, entitled Mankind's Future and the Work of Michael. How does man stand today at his present stage of evolution with regard to Michael and Michael's company? Man stands over against a world which once was wholly divine spiritual being of which he himself was a living part. The world, therefore, in those times when world and man belonged together, was a world of divine spiritual being. In a following stage of evolutionary progress, this had ceased. The world was then the cosmic revelation of divine spirit. The divine spirit in its essential being hovered behind the revelation. Yet still it weaved and lived in this, its revealed glory. A world of stars was there. In their shining and their motion, divine spirit weaved and lived as revelation. One may say that in the place of a star's standing in those days, or in the manner of its moving, might directly be seen the action of divine spirit. In all that here went on, the manner in which the divine spirit wrought within the cosmos, the life of man, as he grew up in every way, a product of divine spiritual action in the cosmos, in all of this, Michael was still in his own element unopposed. He was mediator in the relations of the divinity to man. Other times came. The star world ceased to be the immediate and present bearer of the divine spiritual action. Its life and motion was but the persistent continuation of the same form of action which had once worked within it. Divine spirit lived no longer in the cosmos as revelation, but only as workings. A marked distinction had now taken place between the divine spiritual and the cosmic. They had become two. Michael, from his own fundamental being, remained with the divine spiritual. He endeavored also to keep man as close to it as possible, and he continued to do so. It was his purpose to preserve man from living all too intensely in a world which was only the workings, not the being and not the revelation of divine spirit. Michael accounts it a matter of deepest satisfaction that he has succeeded, through man, in keeping the star world still directly connected with the divine spiritual element, and in the following manner. When man has accomplished his life between death and a new birth, and is on his way down to take up a new existence upon earth, he himself endeavors, as he comes down toward this new existence, to establish a harmony between the course of the stars and his own earth lives. This harmony was a matter of course in times of yore, since divine spirit was at work within the stars, and man's life had its source in them. Today, when the stars merely continue in their courses to carry on the divine spirit's workings, this harmony would not exist unless man sought for it. Man brings his own divine spiritual element that has been conserved from earlier times in him into relation with the stars, in which the divine spiritual element only exists as after effect of an earlier time. Thus a divine element is introduced into man's relation with the world, which corresponds to earlier times, and yet appears in later ones. That this is so is the act of Michael. And this act gives him such deep satisfaction that a great part of his life element, his life energy, his radiant, sun-like life will, lives in this satisfaction. Today, however, when he looks with a spirit's eye, E-Y-E, at the earth, he sees there another and essentially different state of things. Man, during his life, now in the physical sphere, between birth and death, has all round about him a world which is no longer directly even the workings of divine spirit, but only something left behind from these workings. What one can only call the work wrought by divine spirit. This wrought work is in its forms altogether of a divinely spiritual kind. The divinity manifests itself to human perception in the forms, in the natural processes of this wrought world. But divinity is no longer within it as a living presence. Nature is this divinely wrought work of the divinity, and everywhere the molded likeness of the divine workings. In this sun brightly divine, but not livingly divine world, lies the life of man. But owing to Michael's work upon him, he has conserved as man his connection with the essential being of divine spirit. He lives as a God-pervaded being in a non-God-pervaded world. Into this God-voided world, man will introduce what is in himself, what his own being has come to be in this age. Mankind will take its place in a world evolution and expand its own form there. The divine spirit being from which man first sprang, spread abroad as man-being throughout all the worlds, will then have power to fill with light that cosmos which now exists only in the wrought likeness of divine spirit. It will no longer be the same being which once was cosmos, which will then shine forth in light through man. Divine spirit in its passage through mankind shall realize a quality of being which it had not brought to manifestation before. Against the progress of evolution in this direction, the harmonic powers turn all their force. They do not want the divine spiritual powers of its origin to illumine the universe on its further course. Their aim is that the whole of the new cosmos should be lit by the cosmic intellectual light which they have absorbed into themselves, and that man should live on henceforth in this intellectualized and Ahramanized cosmos. In a life of this kind, man would lose the Christ. For Christ came into the world with an intellectuality which is in every way the same as it was when once it lived in the divine spirit. When divine spirit in being still inform the cosmos. If today we speak in such a manner that our thoughts can also be the Christ's, then we set something against the Ahramanic powers, which will save us from falling into their snare. To understand the meaning of the Michael mission in the cosmos means the ability to speak like this. One must be able in these days to speak about the world of nature in the way demanded by the present stage of the spiritual soul's development. One must be able to make one's mind familiar with the purely scientific, naturalistic mode of thought. But one must also learn to speak, which means to feel, about the world of nature too, in a manner befitting the Christ. Not only about redemption from nature, not only about the soul and things divine, but about the cosmos. We must learn the Christ language. That our human link with our first divine spiritual origin may be so preserved that we may know how rightly to speak the Christ language about the cosmos, this is something to which we shall in the end attain, if with inward sincerity of heart we learn to feel and ever more fully enter into all that Michael and Michael's company are amongst us, in their mission, in all that they perform. For to understand Michael means today to find the way to the Logos as lived by Christ amongst men on earth. Anthroposophy sets due value upon all that the naturalistic form of scientific thought has learned to say about the world during the last 400 or 500 years. But Anthroposophy has another language to speak besides this one, about the being of man, the evolution of man, the growth of the cosmos. Anthroposophy would speak the Christ-Michael language. For if both languages are spoken, then the continuity will remain unbroken, and evolution will not pass over to Ahriman, before finding again its first divine spiritual origin. The language of the natural sciences by itself alone is a manner of speech that befits the detachment of the intellectual force from the divine spirit of its origin. It may become the language of Ahriman if Michael's mission be neglected. It will not do so if, through the might of Michael's great example, the freed and detached intellect comes to itself once more in that cosmic intellectual power of the beginning, which, severed from man, has become objective to him, but which lies at man's source, and appeared in its living essence in Christ within the realm of humankind, after having left man for a while in order that he might unfold his freedom. Leading thoughts number one. Divine Spirit manifests itself in various ways in the cosmos in the following stages. Number one, in its own primal and essential being. Number two, in the revelation of this being. Number three, in its workings, when the being withdraws from the revelation. Number four, in its wrought work, when in the universe, as this appears, no longer the divine itself, but only the forms of the divine are there. Leading thought number two. Man's present view of the natural world gives him no relation to the divine, but only to this finished work, wrought by the divine. The effects communicated to the human soul by this view of the natural world are such that man may use them, either to ally himself with the Christ powers or with the forces of Ahriman. Leading thought number three. Michael's whole aim and effort is that the pristine relation to the cosmos, which has been conserved in man from the ages of the divine manifestation in being and revelation, should, by the free effect of Michael's own example, become incorporated in the further human and cosmic evolution. For then the present naturalistic view, which tells only of the image or empty form of the divine, will be able to pass over into a higher view of nature, more befitting the spirit. This higher view of nature will have present existence in man, but it will be a human after-realization of the God's relation to the cosmos during the first two stages of cosmic evolution. While giving assent in this manner to the view of the natural world, which belongs to the age of consciousness, age of the spiritual soul, Anthroposophy supplements and completes this view by another, the result of observation with the awakened eye, EYE, of the spirit. The end of letter 6.